Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Parker. I am coming to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. This is Medical Whistleblower, and we are an advocacy network of persons who are interested in improving our medical community and our services for the health and well-being of the American and international public. I am coming to you today to discuss the situation in regards to the Convention Against Torture. This has been much in the news lately, and we have had some recent developments that are very important on this issue. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, chose on July 30th, which is only a very short time ago, to have signed one of the UN instruments on human rights, that is the UN Convention on the Rights of the Disabled. Now, this was a very important document for us to have signed, and it's important to understand that this is a very important political step for the United States. The U.S. has only ratified 3 conventions in its whole history: the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention Against Torture, and the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. A country that has signed and ratified a treaty then makes that treaty a part of a law that they are bound to. These are international treaties. They are made to be broadly applicable to persons in all countries. And there is an entire process by which the United Nations is able to select language, negotiate agreements between countries with very differing backgrounds and cultures, and to come up with a universal language that all can agree on. There are 650 million people in the world that are living with a disability. And the UN document that was recently signed will affect all of them. The document was originally started by the United Nations General Assembly in December 2006. And language is finalized, and it was open for signatures in March of 2007. The United States, of course, was not the first nation to sign this treaty. The convention builds on and works on a synergy with many different groups. And started with a group of documents that had to do with opportunities for persons with disabilities and the World Program on Action on Disabled Persons in 1982. Now, 80% of the persons who are disabled actually live in developing countries. And because of this, it is an important document for those developing countries. It is a response to the fact that although pre-existing rights conventions offer considerable potential to promote and protect the rights of persons with disabilities, that potential had not been tapped, and persons with disabilities continue to be denied their human rights and in many parts of the world are kept on the margins of society. Persons with disabilities are particularly vulnerable to abuse, neglect, and human rights violations, and even torture. And situations that for a person who doesn't have a disability might not be considered torture, might be considered torture if that person has a particular vulnerability or disability. So this particular convention, although it does not create new rights, it is very important in articulating the rights for those who are disabled. The purpose of the convention was to promote, protect, and ensure the full and equal enjoyment of all human rights and fundamental freedoms by all persons with disabilities, and to promote respect for their inherent dignity. It is both a development and a human rights instrument. It is a possibility and cross-sectoral, and it is legally binding. It does make a paradigm shift in the attitudes and the approach. It is important to note that the convention does not explicitly define disability, but instead states that disability is an evolving concept, and that disability results from the interaction between persons with impairments and attitudinal and environmental barriers that hinders the full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. I would like to ask you all to consider calling in and joining me on my show. Our call-in number is 347-857-4599. Again, our call-in number is 347-857-4599. The President of the United States was making a statement in regards to his commitment to human rights in signing this bill. And we are hopeful that the Congress of the United States will then ratify this convention and follow the President's lead. Continuing on to explain a little more about the convention, Article 1 of the convention states that persons with disabilities include those who have physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairments, which, in interaction with various barriers, may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. So, disability results from an interaction between a non-inclusive society and individuals. For example, a person using a wheelchair might have difficulties gaining employment, not because of the wheelchair, but because there are environmental barriers, such as inaccessible buses or staircases, that impede access. Persons with extreme nearsightedness, who does not have access to corrective lenses, may not be able to perform daily tasks. But the same person with prescription eyeglasses might be able to perform all those tasks without problems. The preferences for terminology among persons with disability among geographic regions may vary, but the convention terminology had decided to use the terms person with disability rather than handicapped or physically or mentally challenged. And the general principles of the convention were respect for inherent dignity, individual autonomy, including freedom to make one's own choices, and independence of persons, non-discrimination, full and effective participation and inclusion in society, respect for difference and acceptance of persons with disabilities as part of human diversity and humanity, equality of opportunity, accessibility, equality between men and women, and respect for the evolving capacities of children with disabilities, and respect for the right of children with disability to preserve their identities. In regards to non-discrimination, it's important to note reasonable accommodation must be made for persons with disability. And reasonable accommodation is necessary and appropriate modification and adjustments, not imposing a disproportionate or undue burden where needed in a particular case to ensure that persons with disabilities the enjoyment and exercise of equal basis with others of their human rights and their fundamental principles. I hope that all of you who are listening could join with me in this discussion, because we are very concerned that the United States takes a good lead here in regards to defining human rights issues, and that we have had a slippery slope over the last 8 years in regards to the United States not taking the high moral ground in this area. And in particular, we have had a lot of discussion about what exactly is torture or degrading and humiliating treatment, and what exactly were our requirements as a nation to uphold the Convention Against Torture, of which we are a signatory and which we also have ratified. And in regards to dealing with persons of disability, the likelihood that someone could have received cruel and degrading treatment is higher than that for the general population. And there are several reasons for that. One of those reasons is that persons with disabilities often cannot remove themselves from situations where they might be mistreated, either because of their disability or because they have been incarcerated in a place where they cannot get out. It's very important to understand that persons with disabilities can be held against their consent, often without legal redress to find freedom from that incarceration, and with limited access to legal resources. The Convention for the Rights of the Disabled is a way of addressing some of those issues and to emphasize to the American public and the world that the United States understands these very basic realities of the rights of persons, and to emphasize that the United States is hopeful that other countries will follow in embracing the Convention for the Rights of the Disabled and will consider very carefully their actions as a nation in regards to persons who need to have their rights protected, who are disabled. Accessibility for the disabled includes justice, living independently and not being excluded in the community, information and communication services, education, health, habilitation and rehabilitation, work and employment, which includes human resource policies and practices, adequate standards of living and social protection, participation in political and social life, and participation in a cultural life, recreation, leisure, and sport. In the convention, there are a variety of articles, and each of the articles delineates a particular right. And so, for example, Article 5 is the equality before law without discrimination. Articles 10 and 14 are the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Article 15 is the freedom from torture. Article 16, the freedom from exploitation of violence and abuse. Article 17, the right to respect of physical and mental integrity. Article 18, the freedom of movement and nationality. Article 19, the right to live in community. Article 22, respect for privacy. Article 21, freedom from expression and opinion. Article 24, right to education. Article 25, right to health. Article 27, right to work. Article 28, right to an adequate standard of living. Article 29, right to participate in political and public life. And Article 30, the right to participation in cultural life. As you can see, this covers many, many areas of a person's personal life. And so, therefore, this particular document is very broad in its embracement of the rights of persons. And I want to remind you all again that you can call in, and our number is 347-857-4599. Again, our number is 347-857-4599. And today we are talking about the historical signing of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, including the rights of persons with disabilities to not be tortured or to receive cruel and degrading treatment. And in this context, we are talking about the impact of the convention on persons with disabilities and what it means to the policies and programs of the United States when it becomes ratified. Two things happen for a convention to become applicable in a particular given country. One, the convention needs to have been entered into force, which this particular convention has been. To be entered into force means that the convention has been ratified by 20 states, member states. And that has happened with this particular convention. And number two, the convention becomes applicable in a particular country if the country ratifies it. So the signature of the president on this convention is a request for the Congress to ratify it. And we will soon see if the Congress follows the president's lead and ratifies the convention. It would be very nice, of course, if the country's leaders were to take a firm stand and support human rights at the level of the U.S. Congress and ratify not just this convention, but other aspects of the human rights documents which the United States has not already ratified, including the Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Convention on the Rights of Women, both of which are important conventions we have not yet signed. Once a convention has been signed, the member states who have signed the convention and ratified it become bound by law to obey the measures within the conventions. And so this becomes the process by which complaints can be brought to the United Nations regarding a person not abiding by the law defined in the treaty that everyone has agreed to. Again, I want to encourage you to call in. Our phone number is 347-857-4599. And today we are talking about the President Obama's most recent signature on the Convention Against Torture and Degrading Treatment of Persons with Disabilities, including the rights of the persons with disabilities. And this is a separate document from the Convention Against Torture, which we had already signed and ratified. There were three documents that the United States has signed and ratified that are in the human rights documents at the UN. And there are many documents we have not yet signed. And there are many that would be very worthwhile for us to consider having our nation's Congress ratify and sign. But we are hopeful that this is a step in the right direction. We do know that protecting and promoting human rights is a problem for some nations and even in some areas of the United States because of limited resources. But limited resources are not really an excuse to delay implementation. There are many strategies for effective use of limited resources, including targeting low-cost programs, targeting people in the most marginalized situations, being non-discriminatory, and drawing on international cooperation. And it's important that one recognize that persons with disabilities can be included in all stages of this. Now, we are hopeful that there will also be programs and policies for women and children and others, and that the work of mainstreaming disability issues will work in the existing human rights treaty bodies through the United Nations Development Assistance Framework, and will increase the inclusion of disability issues in a variety of international ways of cooperation. No entity can achieve the entire goal of equality for persons with disabilities completely on its own, and there is an interconnected network of actors needed to reach this goal. For example, a person with a wheelchair may need access to decent work. So the person needs to be able to move physically in and out of their home, to access public space and transportation, to access work facilities, both the built environment and its information and communication systems. Different entities are needed to ensure these respective spheres of responsibility. And if any one particular element or network fails in its obligations, the persons who are disabled might not be able to reap the benefit of the accessibility in the other areas. For example, if there's not transportation to the workplace, it doesn't matter that the workplace itself is accessible. So in this situation, we are hopeful to find that individuals and groups claiming to see a violation of the provisions of the Convention will bring forward their concerns, that individual parliamentary bodies, such as the U.S. Congress, will have discussion and interaction with the United Nations to discuss the national monitoring implementation role, and that many sectors of governmental bodies will be involved, and outreach to many other national stakeholders, including civil society organizations, academic and scientific institutions, and the private sector. The motto of the protocol and the convention is nothing about us without us. So in other words, there should be full participation of all persons with disability. Now, there is a special rapporteur who has been assigned to deal with the issues of disability. And this person is independent of the governance of the United Nations. They are an independent person. They put together committees to investigate and look at things, and they monitor the implementation of the standard rules for equalization of opportunities for persons with disabilities. They create an awareness of the Convention of Rights of Persons through educational programs and outreach. They provide training documents, and they act as a catalyst to promote international and technical cooperation on disability issues. He identifies strategic areas for exchange and sharing of expertise, best practices and knowledge, information and relevant technologies in order to enhance the capacity building of the member states. Again, this is Dr. Jeanette Parker. I'm talking to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. And our call-in number is 347-857-4599. And I welcome you to call in with your questions or your concerns, in regards to this issue. There are several documents that are involved in the Convention for Human Rights. Many people don't realize how complicated this particular area of law really truly is. We often have just a vague concept of what is actually entailed here. And although the language is inclusive as much as can be done, and it is desiring to be universal in its approach, it is also language that is easily understood. Now, prior to this document being put together, there were a lot of study groups who looked at various aspects of barriers to full inclusion of persons with disabilities. And in those committees and focus groups, there came a great deal more understanding of why we needed to have a separate document in regards to the rights of persons who are disabled. Because persons who are disabled often have unique problems that are not present for persons who do not have disability. And they wanted to make it clear that there should be from exclusion to equality for persons with disabilities, and to view persons with disabilities as full members of society with rights and privileges like anyone else. And the convention was a response of the international community to a long history of discrimination, exclusion, and dehumanization of persons with disabilities. It is historic and groundbreaking for a number of ways, being the fastest negotiated human rights treaty ever and the first of the 21st century. It had very broad support from member states, and it, although the United States was slow to sign the document, there are many countries that signed on right from the very start in 2007 when it was opened for signature. Now, the United States having now signed the document, the President having signed the document now will go in front of the U.S. Congress in order to be able to be ratified. And we are hopeful that that will happen. The statistics in regards to disabled persons are that 10% of the world's population does live with a disability. It is the world's largest minority. And it happens to be increasing because of population growth, medical advances, and the aging process. 20% of the world's poorest people have a disability. And disability rates are significantly higher among groups with lower educational attainment. And on average, 19% of the less educated people in the world have disabilities, compared to 11% among better educated persons. mortality for children with disabilities may be as high as 80% in some countries, where under 5 mortality as a whole has fallen below 20%. In some cases, it seems as if the disabled children are being weeded out. And there have been deep and persistent negative stereotypes and prejudices against persons with certain conditions and differences. They perpetuate a negative image of persons with disability. Terms such as crippled or mentally retarded, wheelchair bound, for example, tend to be delineating and discriminatory. It is important to let persons with disabilities define themselves using terms with which they are themselves comfortable. And there is also an optional part to this disability convention that also is in the documents. And the president chose to sign the standard version of the disability convention. And there was a goal set by the United Nations Summit in 2000 for which the Convention Against for the Rights of the Disabled is a part of that, to achieve those very general goals that all the nations did agree to. And we are hopeful that the key antecedents to the convention will continue to be a guiding source of efforts for further development of human rights law. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights is one of the most important ones, which the United States has not ratified or signed, not ratified. The International Covenant on Economic and Social and Cultural Rights, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. The United Nations have also other instruments dealing specifically with human rights and disability, and these have ranged from 1971 documents to 1993 documents. And so there was a wide range of documents available from which to build the Convention for the Rights of the Disabled. Now, we're not really identifying disabilities specifically, but dealing more with non-discrimination and equality, and asking for reasonable accommodation, and also understanding that situations that involve the rights of persons need to be considered in regards to this convention. The explicit rights set out in the convention are equality before the law, without discrimination, right to life, liberty, and security of person, equal recognition before the law and legal capacity, freedom from torture, freedom from exploitation, violence, and abuse, respect for a right to respect for physical and mental integrity, freedom of movement and nationality, right to live in the community, freedom of expression and opinion, respect for privacy, and the respect for home and family, right to education, right to health, right to work, right to an adequate standard of living, right to participate in political and public life, and the right to participate in a cultural life. Now, there are many other documents in the Human Rights Instrument that do have impact on the disabled. For example, there are principles in regards to detention and human rights, and this has become an issue for a medical whistleblower because if you've been watching our show, you realize that we had highlighted a case of a doctor who is in pretrial detention currently in Houston, Texas, and we have had concerns for whether that was violating his human rights. So it's important to understand that people in detention do not forgo their human rights. Of course, some rights, such as right to liberty, are restricted by detention. But regardless of the reasons of why they were deprived of their liberty, individuals in detention are more vulnerable to human rights violations. And these violations can range from the rights to education, health, food, freedom of religion, torture and forced disappearances, arbitrary executions, and the protection of the rights of those in detention is often not deemed a priority by the public, who then therefore dampen governmental efforts to increase protection of human rights. But governments and their officials, and in some cases private contractors, especially here in the United States and in Texas, are not obliged to violate the rights of detainees. For example, this may require measures to ensure that persons living with HIV or persons with disabilities in detention do not suffer discrimination in relationship to their enjoyment of their own individual rights. Governments have an obligation to protect detainees from human rights abuses by others. In other words, eradicating prisoner-on-prisoner violence. Prison rape is a common occurrence, unfortunately, and that is clearly a violation of the integrity of person. International human rights norms set out in detail that individuals in detention, how they should be respected and protected, and these should form a backdrop to guarantees enacted at the national level. And so human rights standards are also supplemented with a variety of other understandings by the member states and their own governmental processes. And so under these human rights principles, everyone has the right to liberty, so any detention must be lawful and should only be used as a last resort. And there are numerous human rights documents that state that, including the International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights, Article 9, which is signed into law by the United States and ratified, and the Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities, the one we're talking about today, and also the Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Family, which also has to do with the right to liberty. the United States did ratify the Convention Against Torture, and so in detention, no one should be subjected to torture or cruel and inhumane and degrading treatment or punishment. That's Article 7 of the ICCPR and Article 15 of the Convention Against Torture. All persons deprived of their liberty in any form whatsoever are to be treated with humanity and respect for their inherent dignity of person. So that includes respect for them as a person to prohibit them from being tortured, as well as maintenance of proper conditions of detention, access to clean water, adequate and appropriate food, medical goods and services, and in cases of longer-term detention, educational and recreational activities. These are set forward in the Human Rights Instruments of the International Covenant on Economic and Social and Cultural Rights. Detainees continue to enjoy all their human rights, civil, political, economic, social, and culture, insofar as those are necessary to be curtailed by reason of the detention themselves. But the purpose of detention must be clear. It should be for the criminal justice system, and it should be consistent with the aim of reform and social rehabilitation. Individuals in detention have the right to exercise their rights without any discrimination of any kind as to race, color, sex, language, religion, political or opinion, national or social origin, disability, birth, or other reasons, including HIV status. And those in detention must have the opportunity to complain about violations of the rights, be they on the basis of their detention or conditions thereof. And where a violation is found, detainees have a right to remedy and compensation. And so this just shows some of the ways in which the newly signed Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities interacts with the other human rights instruments of the United Nations. Again, I'd like to encourage you to call in. Our call-in number is 347-857-4599. And this is Jeanette Parker. We are talking to you live from Lawrence, Kansas. And Medical Whistleblower is a national and international network of persons who have stepped forward to report problems within the medical community, be they medical fraud that violates the rights of vulnerable patients, patient abuse and neglect, or human rights violations. And today we are talking about the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, in order to, and also in particular, those in relationship to the Convention Against Torture, Cruel and Degrading Treatment, which is a convention the U.S. has both signed and ratified, and the Convention Regarding the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which the President has just signed on July 30th of this year. We have a variety of informational brochures available called the Canary Notes. Comes out monthly. And we also have a set of brochures as well about our work. And we do try to step forward when there are needs for persons to report problems within our medical community. And we have found in many occasions persons who have stepped forward have experienced severe retaliation. And in some instances, that retaliation has been severe enough to actually violate civil rights and even human rights of the medical whistleblowers involved. And so that is the reason why understanding basic human rights is very, very necessary. Now, we do want to encourage people to recognize that we want to have proper dignity and justice for detainees. And we want to promote advocacy that will have a direct positive impact on those in detention, those with disabilities and those who do not have disabilities, and to devise ways to guarantee detainees have access to lawyers at all stages of the criminal justice cycle, including their pretrial detentions, and that to establish and strengthen legal aid and outreach. And we want to highlight the rights of detainees under international law and lobby for national policies and legislation to support minimum standards and establishment of proper codes of conduct for prison staff. And we want to make clear that persons within a detained situation, whether it be a prison, a rehabilitation center, a nursing home, a mental health facility, that these persons are in particular vulnerable to human rights abuses. And so we need to make sure that we are vigilant in our efforts to request proper care. I have someone on the line here, and who is this?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, it's illness defined in Massachusetts. Richard,
hi,
actually.
How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to comment on your subject. You know that I wrote a comment in the chat room, and you know these words are very pretty and profound, but in reality, the rights of anybody incarcerated or disabled are not attainable, especially if the state has to decide whether to give them or not. And I can give you a couple of examples. The old Soviet Union had a constitution. Nobody bothered paying any attention to it. In Argentina and Chile, they had constitutions in the 70s and 80s, and they were still throwing people out of airplanes at 30,000 feet into the sea. We established a precedent after the World War II with the Nuremberg trials. You know, it's kind of a lengthy document, but it's very profound. The state can't do this and the state can't do that, but we won't even follow it. And I'll give you an example of that. Not too long ago, there was a professor from one of our universities in the West went to Portugal and another one into Seattle, I think, and they ran tests by implanting mercury into the teeth of orphans, and these orphans had nobody to stand up to them. They didn't have any rights. The people who were running the orphanage were paid off, both in Portugal and in Seattle. Anyway, they were implanting them with a known poison, and they were running tests on them. That was equivalent to Joseph Mengele in Auschwitz.
Well, it goes to show you that we do need to watch and we do need to be vigilant. And the situation in Texas with Dr. Jacques Aron is one of those situations. He was grabbed and held in pretrial detention since April, and part of that time he had been kept stripped naked in a cell in a dark cell, and they had used restraints, and it was very abusive. And he's not charged with any crime. There's no crime on the docket. This is pretrial detention, and there's no trial date, and there's no crime. And we hear of that happening at places like Camp X-Ray and Abu Ghraib, and
right.
It would happen to a medical surgeon, a plastic surgeon here in the United States, is almost inconceivable. And yet those of us who watch this happen to this man are sitting here saying, well, you know, where is the due process? Where is the proper rule of justice here?
I absolutely agree. From what you've told me, it's shocking, but I can't believe that he's in jail for nothing.
Well, it apparently is a situation where there's a fight over documents, and he has demanded with his attorney that the court prove its case, that the other side prove that they have a right to what they have done, and apparently the court has not supplied that. So that's what I understand has happened.
Well, I can see how the state can get belligerent, but his only options at this point, where if all of his rights have been taken away and there are no charges against him, his only right is to pray that he survives it and gets to another court who will listen to his complaint about his treatment. Then that the treatment becomes a bigger problem than the documents.
Yeah, so raising awareness is crucial, and that's why we came. That's why I did an entire show on this situation, and interviewed both his wife and the court watcher, of civil rights watcher, that went in and was in court with him, watching what was happening, and so trying to raise awareness is important, because if people don't realize these abuses are happening, they will never get stopped. And the truth is that anytime you hold somebody in a position where one person or a group of people have complete power over an individual, and they are able to curtail that person's ability to communicate with others, then that's where the most brutal abuses happen.
Well, I absolutely agree, and I'll tell you what, it's that kind of a thing that arouses the suspicions and mistrust of the everyday citizen towards the state, no matter whether it's local politics or federal politics. It raises the eyebrows and makes people suspicious. Anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for being on my show.
Okay.
And this is Jeanette Parker, a medical whistleblower. We come to you live at 5 o'clock on Saturday evening and also at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. This is Central Time, and here at Block Talk Radio. And we come to you live from Lawrence. Thank you.